are listening to episode 38 with my guest, Liz McKinley. And today we're going to be talking all about her journey in creating Let's Make Room and how Liz left her job at the age of 49, built up her self-confidence, and had the faith to make it work. Welcome to Calm the Chaos. I'm Deborah Vole, and I am a certified professional life coach who specializes in working with women in midlife. We get beyond what's holding you back from living your best life. The end of the year is rapidly approaching, and perhaps you've identified something that you'd like to tackle prior to the end of the year. Getting a head start on 2021 is a great way to finish this year strong. You can reach me through my website, deborahvole.com, and book a free 30-minute call where we chat about what you'd like to focus on and if life coaching is a good fit for you right now. Well, let's go ahead and jump on in with introductions today with my guest, Liz McKinley. Lizbeth, or Liz McKinley, as she likes to be called, is a certified professional organizer, move manager, public speaker, and owner of Let's Make Room, LLC, based in Oakland, California, now in its 12th year of operation. Liz, along with her team at Let's Make Room, helps clients achieve their unique vision of organization before or after moving, remodeling, or to refresh and unclutter their living, work, and storage areas. Liz speaks to both professional and community groups about downsizing, organizing, productivity, and paper management. Her talks have inspired hundreds of people to enjoy their lives with less and get more done. Liz is from New York City and holds a master's degree in clinical psychology and lives in Oakland with her husband, three cats, and a chihuahua. Welcome to Calm the Chaos, Liz.
Thank you, Deborah. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, well, we're glad you're here today, too. We've had a chance to connect prior to today's call and share a little bit about your background, and you were not always the founder of Let's Make Room. You started off as a marriage and family therapist, and I think it would be really helpful for our listeners to hear a little bit about your journey and what got you interested in helping others and serving them in their homes.
I'd be happy to. First of all, I do want to say that I did not practice as a marriage and family therapist. I went to graduate school to study clinical psychology and to train as a therapist. But while I was working towards my license, my hefty student loans came due. And I ended up taking a job in the corporate world since I had a big aversion to being in debt. So by the time I paid off my student loans, I was married and I was immersed in a career as an internal consultant for a large healthcare company. But the pull to finish my hours and get licensed kind of started to fade. But unfortunately, also my job at the time was not particularly gratifying to me either. So at the age of 49, I ended up leaving my job to figure out what I wanted to do with the second half of my professional life. And this was in 2008, as you may recall, when the economy was in free fall. So I have to say it may not have been the wisest decision, but there I was, almost 50. And I didn't want to get to the end of my life full of regrets and wishing I'd taken some more risks. So I took this leap and I had no savings, but my husband, who's a full-time elementary school teacher, was very willing to fully support me emotionally and as much as he could financially for a year. That was our deal. So, and by the way, incidentally, my first year I made the whopping sum of $2,300. My second year, I made $22,000, which is, you know, something, but it's certainly not enough to live on. Last year, I grossed over $100,000. And this year, with COVID, I know I'll be down, but I have savings and loans to help me get through. And business has been surprisingly good lately. One thing I did that was helpful at the time when I left my job was I sought the help of a career counselor who specialized in working with women in midlife. And she helped me navigate the really strange time of transition I was going through. So the idea of becoming an organizer was not the first thing I thought of. And it didn't really come naturally or easily or in a straight line, even when it literally hit me in the head one day. And you know this story. I was literally sitting on the toilet when something fell out of a cabinet and hit me on the head. And it was a bottle of antiperspirant. And I went to put it back in the cabinet when I saw what a mess my cabinet was. And being unemployed and not having a whole lot to do with myself, I started organizing the cabinet. And of course, this led to a lot of other organizing tasks around my house. And then one day, a friend of mine, who was herself a professional organizer, called me and asked me if I could help her with a personal organizing project. And she knew about my psych background, and we had been friends for years. So with my training as a therapist and my consulting skills, I felt pretty confident that I could help her. After the first day I worked with her, I came home and I said to my husband, it was the most fun I'd had in years. And I suppose looking back, there were other pieces to this puzzle that might be too numerous for me to talk about in the time that we have today. But I will say, upon reflection, a lot of those things planted seeds for what I do today.
Yeah. I think it's really wonderful that despite the fact that you were dealing with the recession, I mean, when you were thinking about making this move, it was 2008, so we had a full-on recession at that point. But you kind of followed your intuition, and you said, I just need to be doing something different. And you listened to yourself, and you thought, I'm going to go ahead and seek out some help, whether that's a career counselor or a life coach or a friend or a mentor, whatever works for anyone. That's beautiful that you just kind of took the time to do that.
Well, I think one of the big aha moments was I went to a talk given by a gentleman by the name of Greg McKeown, who has since become fairly well known as the author of a book on minimalism. But the thing that he said that really stuck in my mind is, in thinking about my last job, how much of my brain was I using? Was it 100%? Was it 50%? Was it 10%? And I realized that I felt so under-challenged and underutilized doing what I was doing. And I really wanted to be able to put all of myself into whatever it was that I was going to do next. And one great piece of advice I got from the career counselor was, so I was still at the time looking for a job. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I had started giving organizing a lot of thought. And she said to me, you know, if you try to chase two rabbits, you'll catch neither. And what she meant by that was either job hunt or put my stake in the ground around the organizing thing. And she reflected back to me that she noticed that I had a lot of passion around the organizing. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to do this. This is what I'm going to focus on. And so I did. That's where I put my initial focus. I didn't have a clue about how to run, launch, market, manage a business. I figured I would learn the organizing skills along the way, which I have, but I was, like a lot of people who come into this business, very green.
As you know, by now, running a business is just an evolution. It's always changing. There's always new things to learn. There's always new software to implement or something that's going to be better, that's going to make you more efficient or help your customers in a different way. And I mean, that's the one thing you said about using your brain. I feel like when you are an entrepreneur and you are managing your own business and you are having to rely on a bunch of different things, and a lot of it you're doing yourself, you are continually growing and you are expanding the brain capacity. A lot of people would say, you know, Liz, there's a lot of professional organizers out there. Weren't you a little intimidated? Like, a lot of comments that I would get from some of my clients would be, oh yeah, I'd love to be able to do professional organizing, but there's millions of professional organizers out there. I know that you have a very unique niche. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your business and the services that you provide and how you drilled that down for yourself and your clients?
That's a great question. Well, first of all, one of the things that I think makes my industry special is, and this is particularly true in the San Francisco Bay Area chapter, is as a group of organizers, we always talk about how there's enough work for everybody. And it's a very cooperative community of people. We're friendly competitors. We refer work to each other. We're very supportive of one another. And that's really unique, I think, amongst many industries. So, of course, when I started out, I thought what I was going to be doing was organizing cabinets and cupboards until I quickly figured out that you can't make a living organizing cabinets and cupboards. At least I couldn't. I quickly discovered that working alone was just not a feasible business model for me. So I started bringing in help to work on the kinds of projects people really seem to need help with, you know, large scale stuff like decluttering their garages or unpacking from a move, or, you know, getting their homes organized after a move, or clearing out their parents' homes so they could sell them, or clearing out their own homes so they could sell them. And I also, simultaneous to that, had developed a special interest in helping people tackle their paper piles. And I was amazed how many people would ask me for help with paper, only to discover that they thought the answer to the problem was having someone set up a better file system for them, which, you know, it's true, you need to have some sort of file system, but the first thing I knew they needed help with was simply knowing how to decide what they really needed to keep and what they could safely toss. So I developed my own method for working with my clients to empower them to make these decisions. And actually last night I gave a talk to the membership of the National Association of Professional Organizers San Francisco Bay Area chapter, doing just that, demonstrating the way I work with my clients. So as a company, Let's Make Room, and I'm based in Oakland, we provide home organizing services generally to people who have these big pain points. It's so often that's people who are moving or remodeling, or, you know, have to empty their homes, or even, you know, they've just hit a stress point with their homes and they can't do the heavy lifting themselves. So, you know, the thing is, what I've learned over time is that most people really want to be organized. They just don't want to get organized. So I like to say that we help people get organized, get moved, and get more done.
I want to just go back to something that you said, which I want to just point out, because if there's someone out there today that's listening, that's thinking about venturing out on their own and a little intimidated by the other people out there with the same services, Liz said something very poignant. She said, we work very cooperatively with the other organizers in the area, but that there's enough work for everyone out there. There's enough people. And this, you know, the same thing, Liz, is really true about working and picking your life coach. There's a lot of people out there that provide life coach services. But what I really say is that the life coach is the relationship that you have with your client. And some clients are going to really connect with certain people over others just because of common interests and background and your strengths and some of the journeys that you've walked through that might be similar to what they're doing. I recently had a woman contact me to be a life coach for her daughter, and she was interviewing other life coaches. And I said, well, here's a little bit about me, but really it's your daughter that needs to call me, because it's her that has to connect mm-hmm. with her life coach and have that connection and bond and know that that person's really going to be able to be there, hold space, and support her in her journey. So I really love what you said about I just want to make sure we stop and go back to that because it was really important to be able to share.
Absolutely. I've also believed that, you know, karmically, life has given me the best clients for me. And I believe that, you know, my colleagues get the best clients for them. It's just worked out that way. I've had less than a handful of situations where the match wasn't good, but 99% of my clients over the past 12 years have just been the right fit for both of us. You know, I one of my favorite quotes is, I think I read it in an Oprah magazine years ago, was, "You can't think your way into a new way of living. You have to live your way into a new way of thinking." And that was a huge motivator for me, because when I first started out, I didn't have a clue about what I was doing, but I wanted to do something. And, you know, I don't know where I got the nerve to do it, but I remember maybe in the first few weeks that I was doing this, I had some rack brochures printed by Vistaprint. You know, I spent $10 and I had, you know, 100 rack brochures printed or whatever it was. And I remember my professional photo at the time was a cropped picture of me from my wedding photos. I mean, it was what I had. And I took the rack brochures and I stapled a gourmet bag of tea that I had discovered at a specialty food conference. And I bought this tea and I stapled each one to the rack brochure. And I went out to the local farmers markets in my community. And I would just go up to people and hand out my rack brochure with the tea and, you know, say I was a professional organizer and, you know, people could call me if they needed help. I don't think I got one call, but I will say it started to build my confidence. It started to get me used to thinking of myself in a new way. And, you know, I would just invite your listeners. It's very scary to make a change like this. And it's not easy and it may not be for everybody, but you have to kind of have the faith that you will make it work. And I would just advise people to do what I did in the beginning and continue to do, which is to just take a small risk every day. Do something that feels like a challenge or feels scary or feels intimidating. But just be willing to do it. Take a small risk every day. Make a phone call that you've been avoiding or get out there or do something, because that's what builds your confidence muscles. And that was true for me too. And, you know, I still get nervous before I do a talk. I did a presentation last night, but I get better and better and better at it every single time. It's now really fun. Yeah. I would never have said that 12 years ago.
Well, you're absolutely right. The first time you do it, it's going to be scary. But as you continue to do it, you're building, like you said, that muscle. I'm sure that with COVID, you are doing a lot more virtually with your clients. Tell me a little bit about that, because I know a lot of our listeners are not from Oakland, but might feel a connection with you over the call today. What are some services that you have provide virtually and how does that work?
Okay, sure. So, well, until COVID, I was exclusively working with people in person. My team and I would go into their homes, and we are still doing that to some extent for those services that are considered essential, such as helping people manage and get downsized in preparation for moving, because moving services are still essential in my county. But as soon as I realized that I was going to have to stop working in people's homes, at least initially, I had to quickly figure out this whole virtual thing. The good news is that the work we do as move managers or helping people get downsized is something, like I said, that we can continue to do. But what I had to figure out was how to set up my website. And I am not a tech person. But I had to figure out how can I offer my services virtually. So I figured out, like a lot of people did, I figured out Zoom. I had an online scheduling thing already set up on my computer, on my website called Calendly, but I only used it for phone consultations. So then I went into Calendly and I started expanding my offerings to virtual organizing sessions. I've been working a lot with people on their paper clutter, but I've also been able to work with people virtually around physical clutter. It's just that they do a lot more of the heavy lifting and the work than I'm able to do. But for some people, that's what they're interested in, is not, you know, they're okay with doing the physical work. They need help with figuring out the basics of organizing, how to figure out where something lives, how to contain it appropriately, how to make the decision about whether to keep it or not. And that's all the work that I do anyway. So to be able to do it virtually was not a big leap. The big leap was just figuring out how to set up the technology on my website, which I did really quickly and out of panic, quite frankly. In a way, I'm sort of glad, because necessity breeds invention. I think that's the right expression. So, you know, yeah, I'm still now, what became a problem is turned into a solution and an opportunity to help more people.
You bet it did. And you also, like we were just talking earlier, expanding that brain, right? Learning new things. It keeps you young. It keeps you young for sure. Well, you also help people struggling with the paper monster, as you refer to it.
Right.
And I'm sure a lot of people can relate and maybe have some paper monsters hanging around their house. Tell us a little bit about that process.
Okay. So yes, my method is based on a very simple premise. And that is that every piece of paper we have, no matter what it is, it could be a bill, could be a photo or a contract or a magazine or a store receipt, it's either going to be something that we act on or need to do something with. And that doesn't include filing or reading. So it's a very active process. Or it's something we want or need to keep that needs no action, but needs to have some kind of home, needs to be contained somewhere. Or it's something we don't need and can find elsewhere, such as online, so it can be tossed, but may need to be tossed safely to protect someone's identity. So it's paper that we either act on, paper that we contain because we are likely to refer to it again, or paper that we toss. And that's sort of the global description of my method. The purpose of it is to teach and help people how to identify the paper in their lives that fits the criteria of act, contain, or toss, and to help them physically organize those things. But it really is contingent upon the idea that people who work on this with me want to minimize their paper. So that's generally the first question I ask them is, you know, is it your goal to minimize the amount of paper in your life? Because if that's not your goal, I don't know if I can help you. This process is designed first and foremost around helping you minimize the amount of paper in your life.
Right. So you're helping them with a skill so that once you've made that connection and you've worked through the initial paper clutter, when they have some new paper coming into the house, they can either act on it, contain it, or toss it. And they learned how to do that.
Right. And so I will usually start with where they are rather than start with paper that's, you know, accumulate in their garages. I start with the paper that's right on their desk in that moment. And I ask them, so tell me, pick up a piece of paper and tell me, is there something you have to do with this? Is there, you know, tell me what it is, first of all, and they'll tell me what it is. You know, let's say it's a bill that they have to pay. And I'll say, okay, is that something that's worth your time? And they'll say, yes, because if I don't get it, I'm going to get dinged. Great. Okay. So that's an action that you have to take. I want you to, you know, set that aside. Now pick up something else. And what's that? And they say, oh, well, that's a graduation invitation that I got that's got this great photo on it. And I love it. And You know, I said, well, is there anything you have to do with that? No, there's nothing I have to do with it. I said, could you find it again if you needed it? And they, no, it's the only version of it. It's got this, terrific. Okay, so it's something you want to be able to look at and refer to again. But it's a photograph. So I gather the person, you know, I gather you don't want to put it away in a file drawer. And so, you know, where you would like to look at it. It sounds like, yes. Well, where do you put similar things like this? And I might suggest, you know, if they have a bulletin board or if they have a refrigerator or if they have a place where they, you know, put pictures up on their wall, that's where that thing gets contained. And then finally, you know, they might have like an old bank statement. What do I do with that? I said, this is the best way to explain it, is I say, put the bank statement behind your back and tell me if you think you could you easily find that bank statement again if you needed it? And they go, well, yeah, I can just get it online or I can download it from online. Great. Okay. Well, then what do you want to do with it? Oh, I guess I can get rid of it. Perfect. Okay. But before you get rid of it, check to see, does it have a social security number, an account number on it? Yes. Well, it has my account number. Well, okay. Then maybe you should just make sure that you shred it. That's in the essentially the process.
That's great. I appreciate you sharing with us. And you can either do that in person or virtually. Is that a one-on-one or is there a class that people can go and sign up for? How would you engage with a client?
You know, I have not, except for the class, if you will, that I gave to my members of my professional association, National Association of Productivity Professionals and Organizers, NAPO, I don't teach it as a class. I do work with people one-on-one. And it's because every person's situation is different and unique. But what I essentially want to do is empower them to make decisions about the paper, because that's all that clutter is. It's, we say in our industry, it's delayed decision making. But if you don't know what questions to ask yourself, then you don't know what to do next. I help them make those decisions by asking questions. That's my method. And then they can expand that to other paper. But I do want to point out that the way I work with people around paper is very different than the way I work with them around things. It's two very separate methods. There's some overlaps, but they're very different. And also paper is very tedious. So I try to start with what's in front of my clients first so that they can see results right away. I mean, their desks will be cleared by the time we're done, if we, you know, spend it, depending upon how much stuff they have, of course, within, you know, the session time.
Yeah. Well, I can think of several containment files that I have in my drawers that if I'm not careful, they keep getting thicker and thicker, and that's recipes and decorating ideas.
Well, I have a great tip for you with recipes. You might not like it, but here's my tip around recipes. A couple of things, actually. First of all, when I find a recipe that I like, which I do a lot of cooking, if I don't make that recipe within a week or two, I let it go. If I really think, oh, I know I'm going to make it right now, it's just that it's a winter recipe and it's summer now, then I actually just scan it and put it in Evernote. And I keep a copy of my recipes that I really love in Evernote. I do have a binder that has some, you know, favorite things that I go to often if I don't feel like looking it up on Evernote. But being able to scan it is a great way to, you know, get it, the physical paper to disappear. But I really believe in, if you've never made it or if you love the recipe and you know, it's been sitting in your drawer for 6 months and you still haven't made it, it may be time to let it go.
Yeah, I agree. That's really great advice. I've tried to start doing that when I get a little pile and I'm like, if you haven't made that by now, you're not going to make it.
And you know what? That's okay. Because the wonder, the beauty of that is that you're curating your life. You're discovering what's important to you and what's not. Even if it's just a recipe, you're making decisions about where you want to spend your time. And there's nothing wrong with letting go of things to make room for other things. And that's really my philosophy. I mean, I called my business Let's Make Room, not because I, you know, believed in putting everything in pretty containers, but because I wanted to give people an opportunity to make more room in their lives for either discovering who they were and what they wanted, or to be able to focus on their priorities.
Well, can you share some success stories with maybe some clients that you've had over the years that might be motivating and inspirational for some of our listeners?
Oh, yeah. I've been so fortunate. I've had a lot of great situations. And, you know, I'll take you back to the very first move management job I did in 2011. I had a client who found me online, which is often how people find me. And she was moving. She was retired. She had just retired. She was living in a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house by herself. And she had decided to move back to the East Coast to be near her children and her new grandchild. And she was totally overwhelmed by the process of what she had to do. And she had two different organizing companies come to meet with her, myself and another. But she told me later on that when I walked into her house with my notebook in tow, that she knew that she probably had the right instincts about me. I didn't know this. I was going in pretty green, but I had moved cross country 3 times and I had worked doing project management. So I have a sort of a skill set for getting things done. And I tend to think in bullet points. So I went in to meet with her, and ultimately what we did together is I helped her figure out what to do with everything in her home that she didn't want, and gave her a lot of resources for that. In some cases she would take them, some cases I would take them. I also helped her with a timeline to help her think through all the different things that she had to do, just to keep her, you know, on top of her tasks and to-dos. And then the last thing that I did that was pretty significant was I hired the moving company, or I had been recommended a moving company. This was the very first moving company I'd worked with, and they had come recommended to me. So I brought in this moving company, and some things she needed crating and some things needed just packing. And on the day of the move, for some reason, I don't remember why, she said, "I don't need you to be here on the day of the move." I said, "Okay." But on the day of the move, she called me in tears because the packers were yelling, you know, were arguing with the craters about whose job it was to do what. So I jump in my car and I fly over there, and I'm from New York. So I got my best New York girl on, and I called the owner of the company, and I, you know, as directly and as politely as I could remind him, I had recommended him and that it would mean a lot to me if he would resolve this problem so that my client would stop crying. And I did this call in her backyard out of earshot from her. And sure enough, he got on the stick and he got the problem resolved with his people. And, you know, my client was thrilled because then everything moved along and she did, you know, get everything, moved back east. And the next call I got from her was that she was playing with her grandkids. So I love those stories. I mean, that's why I do what I do. Right now, I'm working on managing a move for a couple that, a family actually, that were Canadian. And they took off for Canada about a month ago. They left the entire house behind full of stuff. And they hired me to help manage the move and get rid of all of the things that they didn't want. The only thing that they were able to do before I left was I asked them, put blue tape on all of the things you don't want. And I'll, you know, and they were under a real time, you know, a time crunch. So in some cases, you know, it was not terribly clear, but we texted back and forth. And now the house is emptied of all the things that they didn't want. I sold some things that they also wanted to get rid of, but were higher value. And the movers are coming on the 21st to do the pack, and the following day to do the load, and they'll be up in Canada by the 1st or 2nd. So that's a very exciting, gratifying job for me. And then of course there's jobs working with clients who have challenged, you know, who've tackled their paper piles, or who've, you know, called me and said, you know, since you were here, I was able to enroll in a class, or, you know, I've been able to spend more time with my kids or my grandkids. So I love those stories. That's what I do it for.
Well, it sounds as though you really found your passion and you've turned it into your purpose, and your business was created. Let's make room. And it's and who would have known? But you know what? You followed your curiosity. And that's what I say is just sit with yourself and think about what it is that really lights you up and you find enjoyment out of, and see what that passion is. And is there a way to serve others with your passion?
Yeah, I think it's knowing what you're good at and matching that up with people's needs. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even say, you know, I don't, you know, it might sound passionate, but I think what it was that I spent a lot of time when I was in transition just trying different things on, and one thing would lead to another. For, you know, I'd go to a conference, or I'd go to a convention, or I would meet new people, or I would try this, or I'd try that. And, you know, and looking back, I realized how it all made sense, but you don't see it then. You just feel often like you're just a, you know, a feather in the wind. But in fact, it's almost like the universe has a divine plan for you, you know, at the risk of sounding too woo. But I think once you commit to something, it's amazing how things conspire to help you keep moving, as long as you're willing to take the action.
Right. Well, this podcast is here to help women calm the chaos in their lives. How do you, Liz, calm the chaos in your life?
Oh, well, you know, I have to be honest, I'm not sure my life is so chaotic anymore, but that's probably because I've consciously worked on that. And one thing is I self-edit my life a lot. In fact, it may be that I might do it too much, because I don't like the feeling of having a lot to do. I don't like the pressure of having unfinished business. So I think very carefully about what I want to do and take on. I'm not one of those people who are often like my clients who have a million projects going on, you know, like I said, because I don't like having a lot of things, you know, left undone. But my business keeps me busy, obviously. And that being said, it's been more of a challenge for me to find that balance between my work and life, because work is the thing that I just do easily. I actually have to force myself to try new things. Like just recently, I signed up for two classes. I signed up for a writing class and a Tai Chi class, but it took me a few days to decide. And I, you know, I don't like to commit to something I think I can't finish. I guess that's what makes me a good project manager. Oh, and I recently went camping. So first time in 30 years, because I, you know, I just needed to get away from my day-to-day life in Oakland and for a few days. And I wanted to decompress, and I did. And I spent some really great time just listening to a river flow and the trees rustle. And I paid close attention to how all my senses were experiencing nature and the smell of the pine or the feeling of the breeze on my skin. And just sitting and being and noticing is a great way to calm the chaos. That's what helped me.
Well, I'd love for you to be able to leave our listeners today with a challenge. Can you think of something that you could challenge them to think about or maybe to do in the next day or so?
Oh, yeah. Well, as I said earlier, I really believe in this idea of taking one small risk a day. And it doesn't have to be, and it really doesn't have to be an organizing challenge. Instead, you know, decide to do one small thing that's a little inconvenient, a little hard, perhaps a little scary, and you know, like my going out with the rack brochures and the tea and going out to the farmers markets. That was scary, but I'm really glad I did it because it was like my coming out, so to speak, and declaring that I was taking on this new role. This was how I built my confidence as I started my business 12 years ago and continue to. Every day you have to do something that's a little hard to push your, you know, to keep you from being complacent and to build those confidence muscles.
Well, what's next on the agenda for you, Liz? And let's make room. What do you have in store for yourself?
Well, I'm starting the writing and the Tai Chi class. And, I started my business because I wanted to help people realize things in their lives that they wanted to do. So for me, this is what I've carved out the room for right now. It's my, you know, I love getting people who, like I said, I love people who compliment me and say, you know, since I met with you, I was able to do this or that. I was able to, you know, spend more time doing things that were important to me. So for me, I think it's about balance and figuring out the time that I want to dedicate to my business and the time that I also want to develop my own self. And, you know, I think that that's really important for all of us to, you know, there, I don't know if there's such a thing as a work-life balance, but I think it's really important to, once you can find the time to take care of yourself in ways that you need to.
Yeah, I think it's just being mindful, and that's what you're doing. You're not getting so caught up in creating and in your business, which you could very easily get caught up and stay in your office 24/7. There's always going to be something to do. It's always going to be there. But knowing, you know, what are my priorities, and not forgetting that you yourself are a priority, and yeah, you want to continue to expand and grow your mind and challenge yourself with new things, and you're going to remain curious. And by giving yourself space to do that, it's just only going to fuel your own business. You're going to be able to bring back that energy to your customers.
Yeah. And I think working on the business, on your what, or working on yourself to figure out what your, you know, destiny is, your path, is itself very rewarding. It's in the beginning, I can't say I spent a lot of time looking at class catalogs. I was getting so much out of just this project of starting, launching, managing a business. And I ended up, I use 110% of my brain every day.
Yes. Well, where can our listeners find you?
Well, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, and of course at my website at letsmakeroom.com. I'm also on LinkedIn as Lizbeth Golden McKinley, or you can search Professional Organizer Oakland. I'm usually on the first page, or just drop me a line at Liz with an S, not a Z, rhymes with Ms, liz@letsmakeroom.com.
Well, it was a pleasure to have you on the show today. And I want to invite everybody to go over to Liz's website, Let's Make Room, and check her out and see what she's got going on. And maybe she's got some paper clutter that she can help you with. She's ready and willing to be able to help you virtually.
Absolutely. And I'm certainly happy to help people, especially I love working with women in midlife and sharing my story with them. And, you know, people want to just spend I do offer a 30-minute free consultation, no obligation, which people can get to via my website, and use that 30 minutes to get whatever questions answered you need, whether it's about organizing or something else.
Well, I appreciate you today sharing so much about your journey as far as how you started and how your business evolved and how you got to where you are today. I think by us opening up and sharing more of that piece of the puzzle, the behind the scenes, it gives more women the courage to be able to dip their toe in the water and have the courage to explore and be willing to face their fears. So I appreciate you going behind the scenes on that.
You're very welcome. I couldn't agree with you more. Thank you for doing this, and thank you for inviting me to chat with you today.
Okay, thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed my discussion today with Liz, and you think about taking that small risk today. Do something that you feel is scary. Make that phone call, maybe set up that meeting. Whatever that is for you, there's no better time than today. If you'd like some help with getting started, please reach out to me through my website. All of my contact information is in the show notes. There is an opportunity for you on the homepage to sign up for my weekly newsletter so you can be kept up to date on each of our podcast guests. And there's the opportunity for you to take the midlife quiz to see maybe if you are ready for your next chapter. I'd love to be able to connect with you. Thank you for joining us today, and have a great week.